Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Javier, I was expecting we'd just be able to kick back tonight and talk about how they talked about the draft and put on some random matchups and just kind of killed time. And instead, we get a women's title match qualifier setting up a title match next week. We have two triple threat matches setting up a one-on-one match to determine who will face Cody Rhodes in his first title defense at Backlash. And major developments in the Bloodline, which we will lead with, hardly a placeholder time filler show. First of all, just surprised that they threw so much threw so much out there right after WrestleMania.
Yeah, I was actually when you invited me on this, I'll probably talk about how we're gonna probably enter the slow period because it's like right after WrestleMania, we got the draft coming up, so they're probably not gonna be firing off much stuff because they're gonna be remapping the stuff that's going on, plus you have all these international shows where, things are probably going to be just, more dream match, kind of thing, not really
exactly
build heavy storyline-wise. I'm like, well, nope, I guess we were wrong.
Yeah, I know. Tell me what you thought of the Bloodline angle, and I mean, really, just like, I'm eager to hear your thoughts on Tama Tonga's debut, Paul Heyman's reaction, clearly not in on this. He's still terrified and shaking and practically hinting at a heart attack. Solo attacking Jimmy with help from Tonga and then having some cryptic words about what the tribal chief says. And we don't know what Roman's going to think about this. Javier, take it away.
Well, just overall on the show, just to put it in perspective, whenever I am following one of these shows closely – at some point I'm going to check the clock, and the number of times I checked the clock is like how bad the show was. And for this one, I saw it was like 9:40. I'm like, wow, I'm kind of wish this were a little bit longer today because it was just a lot of stuff going on. I mean, the big thing for me, I think, was definitely the, even though it's just part one, like we're just starting on the new Bloodline angle, with Solo was great in this because just the moment where he hugs Jay and says, I love you, which was something that, Roman does. It's like, oh my God, here you have this crazy dude. And he was taking notes all this time watching Roman Reigns and just taking out Jimmy. I unfortunately had the Tama Tonga thing spoiled because I read that he was in town, so that was already like, oh, I guess he's showing up.
Don't you just love that? Isn't that just so fun?
And it was a headline, too, so it's like,
I know. I know some people just, work for clicks, and that's how they earn their money, and you're going to get clicks when you spoil stuff, but come on.
You didn't
see the conclusion of this TV series you've been invested in? Let's tell you what's going to happen before it airs. It's so unfortunate.
Yeah,
I've never mentioned Tonga's name. I mean, I don't need to, and I just as a policy don't want to. People can seek other worlds of information if they want, but it's a lot more fun when you don't know what's going to happen ahead of time.
I kind of had the feeling anyway that he was going to be introduced at some point because I knew he had already signed and he was. And it just made sense that he was going to be fit into the Bloodline angle.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to be today.
You saw the headline.
Until I saw the headline. for sure, I mean, that was just and for the people who don't know, he's going to be fun because he could actually cut a promo too. He could be really sinister. Hopefully he could cut a promo without cursing. In Japan, he cursed a lot in his promos, but it's going to be fun. Uh, the just like, you know, new questions. This is like when we were like at the height of the Bloodline story, and I know a lot of people have been like, oh, you know, the Bloodline's getting long in the tooth with, you know, particularly the Jimmy and Jay thing that, you know, went on. But I definitely, you know, now you have like the question of when Tama Tonga is confront, you know, is with Heyman, and yeah, Heyman looked like he was just, Heyman's just great in this. And he tells Heyman that, you know, that's a message from the tribal chief. Well, okay, what are we talking about? Because I'm pretty sure we're not talking about Roman. We're talking about Solo Sikoa, who's calling himself the tribal chief. Are we talking about, you know, Roman Reigns?
I know. It was cryptic.
Yeah. I mean, I said Roman Reigns. I meant The Rock. You know, yeah. Are we talking about The Rock?
I think The Rock would still call himself the final boss.
Yeah. But, like, you know, is it somebody else from the family? It could be so many, you know, because they mentioned the elders, you know, there's Rikishi. We've got, like, it could be, like, anybody at this point. There's interest in that. It also paved the way for Jay and Jimmy to get back together, particularly if we have the draft coming up. Maybe they, you know, then, you know, Jay comes to his brother's rescue. There's just like all of a sudden you've opened up this whole entire like Pandora's box of like new possibilities. And that's a bad analogy. Pandora's box is bad, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. So talk about Tama Tonga a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Tama Tonga is, I think he's like 41 now. He is the son of Haku by adoption, but he's his nephew, I think, by it's Haku's wife's sister's child, and they were adopted. So, and Haku is close to part of the Samoan family. So, you know, so while they're not blood related, they're close enough to be, you know, like, you know, cousins, like, you know, we Cubans, like everyone, you know, everybody, you know, who we're close to is our cousin. But yeah, I mean, I personally have always been really high on him, in New Japan more than, you know, others, just cause I like the way that he moves in the ring, that he's very, deceptive in his movements. He's kind of like a snake when he walks in there. So he's got like a unique style that I don't see in, you don't see in many wrestlers. So that's always a positive for me when don't have everybody with like a cookie cutter kind of style. Hopefully that translates to the WWE. And like I said, he's got a good personality, a strong personality. He's charismatic. And he's confident, which is stuff that you need. So it's going to be exciting. I mean, you know, it's going to be exciting to see the what they do with him. He does seem to be second to Solo, which is, you know, Solo's the one who's been built up. So it's not like it's Tama Tonga who's like the secret boss, you know, pulling the strings. But it looks like it's Solo, or the two of them are working for somebody else. So, yeah, it should be fun.
Strengths and weaknesses, what do you think, in terms of him fitting into WWE? In-ring, on mic, body language, I mean, good start tonight.
Yeah, I like his promos, but granted, it's different in the New Japan, because in New Japan, you're kind of doing your own thing. So, and you're cutting your own promo based on, you know, it's not like really scripted or stuff. It's like, you know, you're doing your own thing. And sometimes he will like sometimes just like go off the rails cursing and stuff like that. The biggest weakness would be like, you know, you're going to have to introduce him. Because he's not, you could kind of tell that you had a segment of the audience who knew he was, and they were, you know, chanting Holy Bleep. But there was also like, but that felt like it was like a smaller percentage of the audience, like, you know, maybe like 20% as opposed to like the entire, you know, arena getting behind him. It's all like in how you use him. I mean, I don't think he's going to be like, I'm not saying that he's like, you know, like a Jay White or anything, but like if you're going to have a piece of a puzzle to add to this Bloodline story, he's someone who I think has a good mechanic, like a, you know, like, which is, and that might be why I'm excited, because those are the kind of wrestlers I like the Arn Andersons, people who could like do a lot of the heavy lifting for others and still be entertaining. So I'm, you know, that's why I'm hyped for this and, you know, what's coming down, you know, the road for the storyline. I mean, assuming they obviously continue on this rank, because we really just saw the first. They could just face slap right after this. But
yeah.
But, you know, but it's an exciting new beginning.
With Solo, in recent weeks, there's been a little bit of some talk of, has Solo been protected enough? He hasn't wrestled a lot. When he has, he wasn't super protected. My stance was, yeah, but wasn't really being buried. And the way WWE operates is we don't think people are going to remember some of that stuff if we tell a good enough story and present them in a strong enough way. Where are you? If Solo was going to have this prominent of a role right after Mania, and you know, I suspect they had a real good idea. They were doing this for quite a while. Should they have done anything different with Solo, or do you think the way they utilized him for, you know, TV match here and there and booked him, and I don't even have, like, memorized everything that they did with him. I just know, you know, we took some calls and emails and people just going, man, you know, Solo is protected and now it seems like he's not. How do you feel about how he's been framed?
I mean, he wasn't really not protected because, I mean, the people that he lost to were, you know, way up there. you know, he lost to Cody, right? And that's, you know, your Cody's going to be the one who's going to be your champion. So I think it's less like he was not being protected and more like he had faded into the shadows. And I think that was more what people were, you know, because I noticed it felt like he was fading into the shadows, but it kind of makes sense because hell, even Roman Reigns kind of, you know, faded with The Rock's involvement. So once you drop The Rock in there, it's like, you know, Solo felt like he disappeared, particularly since he wasn't involved in any core storyline because Jimmy at least had the J stuff going on. So he more vanished than I would say, which, you know, you could argue that is not protecting him because he was, you know, it was always like, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? But also, you know, him disappearing, like all of a sudden, he seems, you know, the like a threat. You know, I the spike to his brother was like, you know, and the way that he kept saying "I love you" and like it's just like this unhinged version of it. And now, you know, it felt like he was only under control because Roman Reigns was there. And even then, you know, back, you know, along the storyline, he always kind of bristled. And it's like, and now you see him like now he does not have that leash anymore. By the sounds of it, like, you know, he's lost respect for Reigns. We'll probably get there at some point. You know, the biggest question would be if he's going to try to take the mantle of Tribal Chief, or like I said, there's a hidden Tribal Chief, you know, the final boss, The Rock, or, it's a big family. So,
yes.
Yeah, and maybe he's taking orders from Nia Jax.
There we go. Yes, there we go.
All right. Thing that I also it felt interesting was Naomi when during her segment when she confronted Tiffany Stratton, she said today's not the day to mess with me because, you know, I'm assuming that was hinting the fact that she's worried about Jimmy. You know, but they didn't sell it to the point where it's like, hey, yeah, they have a relationship. You know, they didn't make that a point, but it kind of added like realism drama to like, oh, you know, Jimmy wasn't, you know, that this is happening for real.
Yep. All right, very good. Let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then we'll get to calls. I believe we have an on-site correspondent or two calling us and a lot more to talk about on today's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, April 12th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller. This is our coverage of SmackDown. We're live streaming after the SmackDown after WrestleMania. It's not as famous as Raw after Mania, but tonight was pretty eventful. And we're here to talk with each other and also with you, our listeners. You can give us a call right now if you haven't already. Our number to participate in the show or just listen in is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 if you want to be flagged down or switched forward to be brought onto the show. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. You do not need to listen to the live stream to participate via email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. And if you do want to live stream the show, if you are listening to us over the weekend after downloading the show, the way to find us is at pwtorch.com. Click on my TV reports at pwtorch.com during Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and sometimes Collision, and look for the link, and that'll take you right to the live stream. You can also find us by going to wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to the live stream. Those are the two best ways to find us every Monday, Wednesday, Friday night, and sometimes Saturdays. The other voice you hear is Javier Machado. He is a pwtorch.com contributor. He was part of one of our WrestleMania roundtables last weekend. He submits his preview and predictions for pay-per-views and PLEs. Javier, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Always happy to join you, and man, what a fun show today was.
Yes. So let's get rolling, and we'll actually start with Ken in Pittsburgh. Ken, you're a first caller. What's in your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Hey, Wade, how are you tonight?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, it's good to call in again after the Chicago Raw, my first time. It's finally over WrestleMania week, and everything's finally over now tonight. I think we can all relax a little bit. I just wanted to call and say, yeah, this is a good SmackDown. I enjoyed it. Some good storyline developments. You know, I thought, you know, I'm excited. You know, I like the triple threats and how they wanted to set up, you know, Cody's first title defense as a WWE champion. And I thought, you know, it was just really a solid show that went by fast. And was just consistent throughout. It wasn't like dragging. You know, they did all the post-WrestleMania celebration, which they should, and they have every right to brag about it. But it was like, overall, I thought it was a thumbs-up show. And definitely, like, if you missed it, you know, you can just watch the clips on YouTube. But I thought it was fun watching it as it played out. That's my first take.
Javier. Any reaction to that?
And the celebration was more muted than it was on Monday. So it was like, okay, it is the first SmackDown after WrestleMania. We're going to touch upon this, and it really felt more like, okay, it's time to turn the page, and now we're heading in a new direction. I thought that was well done. So I didn't feel like it was like overselling things.
I just wanted to say, it's like being, you know, I was there this past weekend for WrestleMania and WrestleMania week, and it was a fun time and a blast. I mean, I don't want to make it too much about it myself but it was fun. I mean, it was a great week being a part of all that and seeing all that happen and seeing Cody win and all that. And I just, it's, how else do I say it? I feel like WWE is such on a roll right now that it's just kind of incredible. Like, it's just incredible to see this after everything that's gone on these last few years. I mean, that's kind of another thing that keeps popping in my head every time I watch what they're doing and the streak they're on right now for their televised. In what sense?
When you say over the last few years, are you talking about negative stuff behind the scenes, or are you just saying the bloodline and the hot storylines and all that? Like, I just wasn't quite sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you think about, like, just in the context of, like, you know, everything that was going on behind the scenes with Vince McMahon and just all the issues and just, you know, all the, like, just, and everything that's happened since, you know, he's out of power, he's gone, Paul Levesque's running everything, and you watch it and you're just like, you know, it just, everything just seems like you can see there's a direction, you can see there's, you know, you can see where they're going, and you know they have a plan as to where they want to go with things. But the fun part now is, like, you don't have to worry about them booking on the fly or changing things at the last second, you know, barring injury, of course. But, like, it's like, you know, there's the consistency, and they're filling in the gaps, and they're leaving you wondering, okay, what's going to happen next week? What's going to happen 2 weeks from now? How does this lead into the big PLE? How does this lead into SummerSlam? And, you know, I think the Bloodline story, yeah, it's been great. And now it seems like there's a new phase of, like, are they really going to build towards Roman Reigns now that he's no longer the heel champion? He's going to go away for a while. You know, are they going to build towards him having a face turn? They're going to try it again with him as a baby face. You know, that's the intrigue that, I mean, based on what we saw tonight with Solo and Paul Heyman just fearing for his life and Paul selling it as only he can, So,
I mean, is there one thing we're going to happen? And Ken, I'll pause you for a sec. I want to throw this out there to Javier. What you just brought up prompted this question that I want to talk about, which is, I've been, you know, talking this week with people about, you know, how many WrestleManias in a row do you think Cody's going to headline? And one of the responses was, well, that's up to Roman Reigns. Because, well, it's the new era of Cody Rhodes. Roman Reigns might have something to say about how many main events Cody has, depending on his schedule and this interesting scenario of Roman. Likely, we're watching the transformation of him going babyface. And, I mean, there were certainly hints dropped and body language to Rock and whatever. You know, a number of things we can talk about that pointed in this direction, and then including tonight. If it is happening quickly, Roman's going to be a top babyface. Cody's a top babyface. There are two nights of WrestleMania. Who gets night two of WrestleMania next year? Cody and Rock? Then is it like Roman versus Solo or Roman versus Seth? You know, because we had some talk about by Heyman about, oh, you know, Reigns wanted retribution against Seth, or, you know, variety of ways that could go. But then what about the WrestleMania after that? Does Roman want night two back? Or is Cody super over and still over as a babyface and has a perfect opponent? Maybe they save Gunther until then, or who, you know, Drew McIntyre or somebody. I mean, there's, or Solo Sikoa, it's his year, or whatever. There's so many, like, you've got Roman as a babyface, you got Cody as a hot babyface, and other people vying for top babyface spots too in this company. It's a really intriguing scenario if we really start looking ahead and think about how much room is there for Cody and Roman, both as top babyfaces, if Roman's over huge and Cody stays over huge. WWE's got what we call a good problem with two potential red hot babyfaces that management, mainly Paul Levesque, has to figure out who gets that night two main event spot. Javier.
Yeah. I had an answer formulated, but somehow it left my mind because I started thinking about AI from the question on the fix with too many wrestlers.
That was a scary editorial written by AI. It was pretty well done.
Yeah, that thought totally threw me off. The thing is that it felt like they already started laying the breadcrumbs for a Roman Reigns face turn, because mainly with Paul Heyman, when he said that that they lost and it's the champion's dressing room, they took the loss. Heyman and Reigns took the loss honorably, which is a positive trait. So that's already one step in the direction of turning him into a babyface. Where, yeah, he was, you know, he cheated and all this stuff, but there's at least some level of honor because he was overcome. Even the, you know, he was defeated. So that's already a, you know, instead of whining and saying, oh, it was, you know, it was because of this, it was because of that, and making an excuse, they owned up to the excuse to, you know, he took his eye off the ball because of these reasons. And it's not Seth's fault. It's my fault for taking my eye off the ball, just like it was Cody's fault in WrestleMania 39 for taking his eye off the ball and allowing Solo to distract him. I think ultimately who ends up being involved is how over does Solo get, because if he gets...
Or Tama Tonga, or anything else, or like
where The Rock is at that position, at that point. I think that might actually be an interesting 1-2 punch for WrestleMania if they can get everybody, you know, over to the right degree, is maybe have Cody and The Rock for the championship, and then the other one be Reigns versus someone else from the bloodline. And ultimately, you know, Reigns has to team up with Cody to defeat, you know, this bloodline out of control. So I think that might be like the best case scenario. But I mean, obviously there are people who are going to have to get over to a certain degree to get us to that position. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure they do want to get to Cody, Cody Rock, and at some point probably and at some point go into Reigns Rock. So those are the two that I'm looking for and seeing them fall in. I don't know about Reigns Seth, because they could just have this be him taking him out with the chair, just be the quote unquote revenge that he wanted, or that he got it out of his system because, you know, going after revenge is what ended up costing him what was most precious to him. So I, you know, while I think it's still possible, I'm not going to, like, you know, if it doesn't happen, I think that they could really sell this as the moment where, like, their thing ended.
There's also a chance, by the way, that Cody and Rock, and I don't think you address this, and I sort of threw out what if it's at WrestleMania next year night too, that Rock might wrestle Cody at SummerSlam. And then it just – then it opens things up for a rematch or something completely different at WrestleMania 2. I don't want to say it's – I just want to underline or make sure it's clear. I don't know what next year's main event's going to be, but Cody versus Rock is the big match that Rock said and Cody addressed tonight. He's stepping away. He's going to come back for. My preference is to have that sooner, but I don't know what that does for WrestleMania next year that feels WrestleMania worthy a year out. If Roman is a babyface and Cody's a babyface and Cody has already defeated The Rock, then you do Rock versus Reigns on night two, not for a title, and you do Cody versus Gunther or Cody versus Solo or Tama Tonga on night one, or flip those two around. I've thrown another twist in there, but the pace could be a little different.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I would prefer at SummerSlam because it's hot now, but I mean, I honestly did not. Well, I mean, and I guess it kind of wasn't. It was just because after WrestleMania 39, I'm like, are they going to be able to keep Cody that level of hot going into 40? You know, my faith I didn't have faith back with WrestleMania 39. You know, and I don't think necessarily that the WrestleMania 40 Reigns Cody was as hot because of the Rock situation, and I think that took some steam off of it. But, like, if you're combined both nights, I think it worked. You know what I mean? Because of the tag team match on the previous night also being very important. You know, it being a two-part story. So yeah, I mean, it's I think if you could get two nights of bloodline related stuff, I think that. I would be fine with Rock and Cody happening at WrestleMania because then, yeah, because, I mean, if you have Roman and, I mean, and the Gunther question, I mean, could you get Gunther over hot enough? Because I think Gunther could be either a SummerSlam or WrestleMania opponent for Cody. I would actually think that Gunther might actually be more likely for Cody for SummerSlam, now to think about it.
All right, Ken, I'll throw back to you. Your thoughts on our conversation here, or you can switch topics if you want to.
Just to piggyback off that, I mean, I'll just say if I could see Rock and Cody at SummerSlam, but depending on Rock's scheduling and the timing of it, I don't think that would happen. I think Javier's right. I think Gunther's a more likely scenario. I think that'd be a tremendous main event for SummerSlam. I think I would say this, if they really go all the way with Roman Reigns as a babyface, I could imagine him and Cody. That would be an amazing night one main event for WrestleMania if Cody and Roman team up to take on the Bloodline. And whoever the combination is against them, I mean, that would just be – I mean, man, the energy and the atmosphere, just seeing those two guys who, you know, fought over the title and beat each other at WrestleMania back-to-back years teaming up against common enemies would be quite the story. And I'll just put that out there. But, yeah, I just think, you know, being there for both nights and seeing the main event and the tag match and the undisputed title match and just, you know, I mean, they closed up the whole first couple years of the Bloodline, and I feel like this next phase, this next story arc is going to be fascinating to watch on SmackDown, and we'll see if there's any developments on Raw over time. But, yeah, I mean, obviously all the X factors are there. You know, what's Raw, you know, when's Raw going to be back? How ready will he be? And, you know, how hot will Cody stay? And, you know, Paul Heyman being the master of what he does, you know, interesting to see how how he plans everything out. And I'll say this, a babyface Paul Heyman, what a world if he does that. That would be just fascinating to watch him play off the fans as a babyface. That'd be just tremendous.
Oh, yes. Reigns and Solo and Tama Tonga versus Roman, Jimmy, and Jay. Am I missing any key players if they do that mega six-man match? Is there anybody else that would necessarily need to be in that mix, so, you know, other than Heyman managing, presumably Roman? Javier?
Not without spoilers.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, boy.
So we could have a Bloodline versus Final Boss crew, or winner gets to be the Bloodline or something at, you know, in one of these big events. And that could take away the need for, you know, some of these singles matches that we're talking about. So, yeah, there's a lot of cards that can be played at major events, you know, the major ones being SummerSlam and WrestleMania 41. And then, you know, I'm not quite sure I want to look too far beyond that, other than if Roman and Cody are both babyfaces at 42 and 43 and still active, I'm curious how that all shakes out.
Well, I mean, and I think cause ultimately the two big storyline, the two big directions that would be the hottest, like, part next story to tell is a mega powers kind of alliance between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes against a overwhelming Bloodline. So that's one. And the other one being if you turn if Cody ends up turning heel, because he'd be like a super, I mean, he'd be a super villain heel if that would happen. Those are two. And you could actually do the mega powers together, and then the mega powers explode down the road, depending on how long, you know. But now we're talking about like 2 to 3 years, planning out
right.
2 to 3 years out. And like you said, who knows, you know, how long they're going to be doing stuff like this. So, but again, I mean, that's like how open the story is right now.
It is.
And the thing is that sadly is like you see all these people. I'm like, you want to see it and like, okay, well, you know, Roman Reigns probably only has like a handful of opponents. Importance that he's really going to do. I thought that he would have been already cut even more back than he had.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm assuming now he's no longer the champion that things are going to slow down in the number of matches he has. So, you know, maybe a Cody rematch down the road with different alignments, babyface or their alignments reversed.
Yeah.
You know, Rock Reigns, Rock Cody, Gunther is someone I think really should be involved in that. Seth Rollins is still out there.
Yeah.
McIntyre.
Yeah,
I hate the fact that I'm bringing McIntyre now.
Go ahead, Ken. Yeah.
Oh. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, guys. It's Javier. But CM Punk is always an X factor with his Paul Heyman relationship and all that.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot about CM Punk.
Yep.
Why did you have to remind me?
I know. I mean, he's been used for all sorts of reasons.
And you have to, if you're CM Punk, I mean, this is not 10 years ago. It's not even 2 or 3 years ago. It's a different scene. And he's in his mid-40s. And there's, fair or unfair, there's going to be a thought of, can we depend on him staying healthy? And that's something he's probably going to have to prove over the course of, you know, 10 straight matches not getting hurt. You know, that's going to help him a lot. And it'll take, you know, because some of the stuff does feel kind of fluky. But that will still alleviate some concern. And then he'll be in, you know, he's already in the back of Paul Levesque's mind, but, and Heyman and Reigns and Seth and Drew and everybody. But then, yeah, you and Cody, but then you really start going, all right, we got this piece to play. Cause yeah, when I talk about WrestleMania scenarios next year, and I'm like, well, if it's Cody versus Reigns on, I'm sorry, they're not going to do 3 in a row with that. Cody versus Rock, of course, on night 2, then is it CM Punk? What about, what does Reigns do? I mean, it's just, there's so little room. I mean, imagine if WrestleMania wasn't 2 nights. I mean, it would be so hard to put everybody in. So, and Drew is, I mean, Drew McIntyre, I mean, we're not talking about him right now, but we're talking about him right now. We haven't been. He has been so good, and he's, you know, Roman's age, and he's a lot younger than CM Punk. He's about, you know, similar in age to Cody. I mean, he is a major player to consider too, and he's been doing great work, and I'm sure he's looking around going, I'm gonna make it very difficult to not put me in one of the main events at WrestleMania next year. So, yeah, it's fun, Ken. A lot of moving pieces.
Wait, poetic justice. I didn't have to have to talk about the second night of WrestleMania, but the poetic justice of Drew was glorious for me. Night two of WrestleMania, that was like,
yeah,
that was beautiful. So much poetic justice. If night one of WrestleMania's main event is like Rock and Reigns, and then like the second most important match is CM Punk for a championship. That's
oh God.
Would be poetic.
Oh man.
See, that'll
alive.
Be when we test whether. That'll be when we test whether Punk snaps, you know, if he has a meltdown.
Oh, boy.
Or
woo, yeah.
Goes to Lamaze class.
Oh, man.
You know, yeah.
Oh, God.
Deep breathing. Calming breath.
All of that could end all that, but, oh, boy. He'd have a conniption, probably. And his heart's already not great, so.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'd say, yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, this next year, going into next year's WrestleMania, wherever they're going to have it, whether it's in Minneapolis, Las Vegas, wherever they're going to have it, it's going to be a fun ride. I mean, you got SummerSlam, you got the international shows, you got Survivor Series. They could use that to kind of set up some things and give you an idea where they might be going for WrestleMania. So, yeah, I think it's a fun time to watch WWE. It's a fun time to be a wrestling fan in general. You know, I think... You know, just everything that we've seen these last couple months and what happened this past weekend was just it just reminds you of how great and special wrestling can be, you know, when everything comes together and it all plays out exactly how you hoped or thought it would. So that's just my final thoughts.
Yeah. Cool. Ken, thanks for the contributions. Good topics. We had a lot to say about it.
Yep. Thank you, Wade and Javier.
Me...
Go ahead, Ken.
No, I just want to say, yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Wade, Javier, and, you know, I appreciate it. You guys have a good night and a good weekend, and I'll catch you guys down the road.
Sounds good. Hope you're a regular. Javier, what were you going to say?
Yeah, what I was going to say is that not only is the booking aspect of this has been fun, I was going to say that I'm glad Kevin Dunn is gone because the camera work has been and the shots and what they've been doing has been it's been 100 times better.
Yes. I like Kevin Owens, you know, bringing that up. Like, hey, we got a new thing we're doing the last few weeks. I want to be part of this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go next to Grant in Detroit. Grant, welcome. Good to hear from you. You're at the show tonight.
Yes, I was. It was definitely an experience, for sure.
Good or bad?
Good. It was...
Okay, good. Sometimes people say that was an experience, and it's like, well, there were... You know, my ticket didn't work, and a kid in the row behind me threw up on me, and then, you know, I mean, experiences can be bad, too. So, all right. Well, cool. Good. I'm
you're
glad
absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct, but no, like, I meant, like, I've been to a lot of shows, but this felt different. Like, this product is, like, on fire, and it's, I don't know if it came through on camera, but it was just, like, very, very much everybody seems over. Like, I know normally you'll ask, like, you know, who got the biggest reactions. And, of course, Cody was number one. But number two, like, at first I was like, oh, yeah, LA Knight easily, runaway. And then Jay came out. And then Bianca came out, and it was even louder than that. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be really close to call, like, everybody was over, but definitely. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I want to ask about something a little less obvious, which is Bayley's reaction, and I want to know how it compared to Cody's. These are two new champions. You know, Bayley's been around a long time. She had some time off because of injury. She had a heel run. Now she's celebrating. She had the story arc with Damage Control. Did the crowd, I mean, it seemed like they were really embracing her and into her, but how did the intensity and the duration of that intensity compare to, say, Cody coming out at the top of the show?
So it didn't it wasn't close to Cody's, but they definitely showed her love. It was, the appreciation was there. It wasn't as prolonged as Cody. Like, we was getting Cody chants throughout the whole night. And then he just had the dark main event, too. And, you know, he stayed after, took pictures, threw out his weight belt to a kid. It was so, like, Cody's heat stayed throughout the night. He was just, it was Cody chants all night. But Bailey, she was definitely, she got love. I think a lot of people, the music kind of threw her off, so it might have been a little delayed. Like, I don't think people are used to her new music yet, which is not good, by the way. A few of these new theme songs aren't very good, but I digress. But, yeah, so I think that might have been, you know, a little bit delayed reaction on people. But, no, she got a decent reaction for sure. She wasn't the most over woman on the show, like, but she definitely got a good reaction.
Talk about the other women on the show and the various relative reactions.
A lot of people were very happy to see Jay. Like, I think people thought since she was on Monday's show, she wouldn't be on tonight. So she got a great reaction. But when Bianca came out, the roof blew off the place. Like, grown wow. men, kids, everybody. I'm like, okay, Bianca is super over.
Javier, they've got a good deep women's roster right now. And I don't want to talk about a SmackDown or Raw roster because that'll be irrelevant 2 weeks from now and when things get shaken up. But I'm intrigued with how close in vicinity Bianca and Jade are being presented and what that portends to both of their futures. Is this planting a seed that they're friends, but then they end up on separate brands and they plan to circle back year or two down the line and that, you know, they'll have this history, brief history, teaming that they'll kind of call back to, but they'll get around to some sort of a feud with one of them having turned by that point? Or do they stay on the same brand, team together, but then one of them turns on the short horizon? Or some third option? Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, what I would do is actually team them up, give them the title, and like really concentrate on that. Because with the talented women you have now that you could actually pair off and make tag teams, you could actually have them have a long run, a dominant run, and make those titles mean something. And then get to the point where get to the point where they have like meaningful confrontations with that title, and then split them up. Have them, you know, one turns on the other, depending on, you know, how the landscape is, who you want to turn on who. And then, you know, set that up for like WrestleMania. I think a Bianca Belair or Jade Cargo match at WrestleMania would be, you know, great. And you don't have to put them because of what Bianca Belair has been and what Jade is. You don't need to have a title to make that be a very meaningful match either. So, you have a third important women's match that people are going to, you know, really get behind.
Grant, back to you. Anything else in terms of the response to the women on the show, including Naomi and Tiffany Stratton?
I was just about to say one more person I forgot was Tiffany Stratton. I think they did the smart thing going back to her original music, because I think that Tippy Time music was a little bit too babyface, and they had to kind of slow that down. I'm pretty sure they didn't want her getting over as a face that fast.
Interesting. And what do you think, Grant? Oh, Grant, what do you think of Tiffany's presence? Her star power.
I think she is a potential star for them. Like, that just another one in the women's division where they're going to have to probably find a spot for her on WrestleMania next year. Like, it's like as soon as she came out, she exudes like she, star. Like, she has a presence. Like, she has it is what they usually say.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. How about in the – Grant, how about I'll throw out there – we haven't talked about this really at all, the triple threat matches with KO, Kevin Owens, Styles, and Rey Mysterio in the main event spot earlier in the night. LA Knight, Bobby Lashley, and Santos Escobar. Anything stand out in those matches in terms of crowd reaction or engagement or anything else from being in the building?
The crowd was pretty into everyone. Escobar got good boos. I don't know if y'all noticed, like, during the Cody promo, people was kind of confused how to react to Bobby, but then when Bobby came out, real big face reaction. He got a lot of cheers. People went nuts for the Street Profits running. That was really good. Kevin Owens got big reaction when he came out. Rey Mysterio always, he's going to get that legacy pop. So it was that everybody in those matches was pretty over. After the second triple threat, it went off air, LA Knight cut a promo, like just a quick promo. He was, like I said, he still probably was the second most over person of the night. Like, he was getting cheers all night also, big cheers. But, yeah, as far as the triple threats go, yeah, everybody got pretty good reactions. And the crowd was reacting favorably to pretty much everybody.
Was there any sense of how you'd rank Rey Mysterio compared to Kevin Owens, compared to LA Knight, compared to, I guess, even Bobby Lashley, I don't even know how to describe his movement back to being a babyface character. Anyone jump out order-wise there?
Order-wise, if I would have to go order-wise, I would say probably Cody, LA Knight, then as far as the males go, it will probably be Kevin Owens. It's probably, because we got no Randy tonight. So, yeah, I would say probably Kevin Owens. And then Ray,
then
close.
Ray.
Bobby, yeah. Close. Trying to think who else we saw tonight. Oh, no, I take that back. Third place was Jey Uso. We got him in the dark main event.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about that. Talk about what happened after SmackDown went off the air. This is a good time, Grant.
Yeah, so SmackDown went off the air. LA Knight and AJ was in each other's face. LA Knight challenged him to a fight. AJ left. So then we got Solo coming out for a dark match, and Jey Uso came out, blew the roof off the place. Like, he is every bit over as we see every week on TV. They had a short match. Jey won by DQ. Solo low blowed him. Jey eventually super kicked him out of the ring, and then they went to the next match, which was Dirty Dom Mysterio versus Cody Rhodes, and that went for maybe about 3-4 minutes. Cody went over, of course, and Cody talked to the crowd for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, brought one of the kids in the from the crowd in the ring, gave her the weight belt. He made sure he let the crowd know, like, he wants to stay and sign as many autographs and take as many pictures as possible, but they are going to make him leave eventually, so he might not get to everybody. Cody just come off so genuine, like, everybody just loved it. But that was the dark man event. Before the show started, we got one of those WWE Siege matches. It was Johnny Gargano versus Angel Garza, and Gargano went over. So yeah, those was as far as the dark man event. That's what went on.
Cool. Javier, jump in if you got a question for Grant about anything he experienced tonight.
Well, I had two questions, but he answered them. One of them was if LA Knight cut a promo, because and he already answered that one. When they went to break, because I would think that they would want him to talk. So,
Did it seem like the crowd knew who Tama Tonga was intrigued by him? What kind of, like, heel heat was there? And talk about the ebb and flow of the emotions in the building when all that was going on. That was a historical thing that you got to witness in person, Grant.
Yeah, so I mean, it may be a significant segment, if it's historical, maybe not. But I think a lot of people just didn't know who Tama Tonga was. Like, in my section, probably like two other people besides me knew it was. But once I said who it was, I was like, oh, it's Tama Tonga. A couple of people reacted like, oh, okay, I know who that is. But like, you could tell it was very much a lot of new fans and or casual fans. So a lot of them just, you know, they're not familiar with people from New Japan. Like, it's something that we say about AEW all the time. Like, you just can't assume people know who these people are. Like,
right.
It was very much
commentary. The commentary filled us in, but it is interesting because the live audience doesn't have, you know, Corey Graves going, this is who this is, and this is who his dad is, and this is – so, yeah, it's interesting where the live audience might be looking at this just through – you know, obviously they can take their phones out and start, you know, looking at Twitter commentary or whatever. But, they're not – I don't think WWE is assuming people know who they are, and I don't think they expected Detroit to be like, oh, my God, it's Tama Tonga. But they also, I'm sure, thought this is pretty self-explanatory, and the larger audience will fill them in and – all of that. But just like, if you didn't know who he was, it's almost, I can imagine it almost being more fun for a fan in the building, Javier, if they're like, wait, who's this? You know, like, not knowing and being and just being intrigued with, there's another, you know, member of the family, and this guy is a badass on Solo's side who Paul Heyman is petrified of.
Well, man, I had to figure out, because he changes his facial hair and his hair often. So yeah. I had to, like, you know,
he was wearing a hoodie and a hood too. So.
Well, that too. But once I saw it, I'm like, I had to wait until I saw his chiseled chest.
Interesting.
I recognized him as his actual body shape.
Yeah.
At first, so.
And he was proud to show that off.
Yeah.
You know, that's a little more chiseled than we're used to from the Bloodline.
I tell you what, that's one thing I hope he brings back from New Japan, that he wrestles with a vest and then he takes it off when he's about to get serious. Because I don't think anybody, Garza used to do that with the pant spot. I think it was Garza, right?
Yeah.
Removing the pant spot. But the him taking off the vest was always like one of my favorite spots in New Japan. So hopefully he keeps that around with the WWE.
Yeah. Cool. Grant, anything else you want to share with us?
I was about to say, I'm like, so if, I don't know if you all noticed it on TV, but yeah, that's so, if the crowd was muted, it was because a lot of people just didn't know who he was. They were confused, like, after what was going on, like, who is this? But, you know, but I'm, it's definitely going to be interesting because, like, I was telling one of my buddies that was there, I said, well, if you, it seems like they're setting it up for Roman to come back babyface and Solo and the new bloodline, which would probably be him, Tama, and maybe like Jacob Fatu or somebody, only to take orders from The Rock. And then maybe Roman gets the Usos back together. Like, it seems like that's kind of the direction stuff leading. Because, I mean, Jimmy by himself is not going to work. So I'm assuming that's what's
going to
happen.
Yeah. Cool. Grant, anything else you want to bring up?
Merch lines were crazy. I couldn't even get to anything. Like, it was literally a line from before the show opened. Like, I went up during the show, like, with breaks, like, maybe two or three times just to see. But still long lines. After the show, the line was wrapped. So, I mean, I'm sure they're going to do a ton in merch tonight. Like I said, like, it's just very, very much a hot product. I do want to see how it compares to I'm going to fly to St. Louis for Dynasty in next week, because I want to see Swerve, like, win the title, I don't know if it's going to be able to compare to this crowd. Like, this crowd, it was a party in there, for sure.
Yeah. Well, cool, Grant. You got fun stuff ahead, and you had a fun night tonight. We appreciate you calling up and telling us all about it.
No problem. I probably will call in again, and when I leave Dynasty, I think I'll probably call Wrestling Night in America.
That'd be great.
They should be on.
Yeah, Greg and Brandon will be hosting the live post show, and we'll be doing the roundtable for VIP members. I'll be hosting that, probably with Todd and Rich.
Okay.
Great, yeah, yeah,
just check in with
good, yeah, call again and let Greg know if you can ahead of time at his email, Wrestling Night in America's email, that that you'll be checking in with him.
Okay, not a problem.
Cool, thanks, Grant. I do want to note the PW Torch Daily Cast today normally features the All Elite Conversation Club. They weren't able to record this week, so we're bringing you the 10 years ago WrestleMania 30 live post-game show with Greg Parks and James Caldwell talking about major happenings at WrestleMania 30. That should be available. If you search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, while you're at it, you can also subscribe to the PW Torch VIP free sample feed. That's the PW Torch logo, kind of a charcoal color. The Daily Cast is full of colors. Both of them are free to subscribe to. There are free samples in that PW Torch VIP podcast app for everyone. If you're using the Apple podcast app, you can actually upgrade within the app using your Apple account to a full VIP subscription and try it for free for 3 days, which means you can download my Wade Keller hotline from yesterday detailing all the behind-the-scenes controversy coming out of the Young Bucks, CM Punk, Jack Perry, backstage footage and the Bucks introducing it and reacting to it, and also the Will Ospreay promo on Triple H, Paul Levesque in the comments about the grind, behind-the-scenes information on all of that, and also our WrestleMania roundtables and more. Just lots of good stuff on the feed this last week, and you can get 3 days free. We also, by the way, have unlocked a 7-day free trial on Patreon. So if you're part of the Patreon ecosystem or just want to try VIP for 7 days, all the VIP features and some exclusive articles, including earlier today, I did a VIP exclusive article on the minute-by-minute numbers for last night's Dynamite and talked what the exact viewership was in the ratings report, minute-by-minute for the peak of the Copeland opening match against Penta, the footage of CM Punk and Jack Perry, the FTR interview that followed, the Mercedes Moné interview late in the show, and the main event, and compared them. That is up there for our Patreon members, our Patreon supporters, and our VIP members on the VIP website. Lots of ways to get a lot of VIP exclusive information in written format and podcast format. If you want to get that 7-day free trial at Patreon, go to patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. You can see all the options on subscribing, including through our main website, which comes with our 35-plus years of archives, hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s. What are we at? 1,800-plus back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. Tons of stuff. PWTorch.com/GoVIP will give you an overview of all of that and all the different ways to subscribe. But 7 days free on Patreon, 3 days of a free sample through Apple Podcasts, some good ways to see what we do on the VIP side of things this week. All right. Let's that was all I was going to say about that. I think it was. So let's go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
Hey, can you cut it down just a little bit? What's going on, Wade? Did you want me to do the on-site?
We just talked to Grant, who was in Detroit, and we'd love to get your perspective on the show too. Yeah.
The show was crazy. This is probably I went to SummerSlam at Ford Field, which was that was a different vibe. But like, this is the first time I've been in an arena show probably since before the pandemic, outside of like a house show. And
yeah,
this is as hot as I've ever seen it, probably since like the 97-98 Austin era. I mean, it was just like wall to wall. The energy was unbelievable. You know, everybody was over like they were supposed to be in the roles that they were supposed to be in. I mean, this is like truly a amazing time period for WWE and what they're doing right now.
What do you think you're going to – I have over time asked this of our on-site correspondents. What is – this is a big night. A lot happened. Cody celebrating his title win. Bayley celebrating hers. If you're into Bayley in the women's division, that might stand out. Obviously, the big bloodline development, other things. What are you going to remember most when you look back at this show 1, 2, 3 years from now?
Genuinely, it felt like the start of a new era, you know, with – I know they're really hammering that point home, but it really felt so – not that it felt bad before, but it just felt so fresh, like with Cody being a champion now. I mean, obviously the first time in 4 years we've seen somebody else in that role. So it just truly felt like there was just this new energy, and not from the standpoint of like, oh, man, we're just so happy that we're into something new. It just felt like we're this train is moving along, and now we're on to a whole different phase of what we're doing. And, you know, just I think everybody was anxious and interested to see what comes next. So that'll just be my takeaway, and it genuinely felt like the start of a new era.
Yeah, hey, if the vibe is what you remember and the start of an era, that's pretty cool. That's not just like one thing. We talked with Grant about the different crowd reactions. Talk about how you feel about Cody's momentum. There's always a little bit of concern when a babyface achieves their goal, the old dog catching the bumper, now what moment. It seems like, you know, to me this was a more, and I haven't talked to Javier about this yet either, but I thought this was just a more kind of calm, confident, conversational, copyright Paul Heyman, promo from Cody. There was less, I don't know, less bombast, less, what's the word that I use for Cody's demeanor sometimes? Ostentatious. This was less ostentatious. It was just like, hey, it's time to turn the page and look at other challengers and I don't know. Yeah, but the crowd was like eating it up, and it didn't feel like it dragged, even if Cody was taking his time and just kind of soaking up the moment. But there was, you know, there wasn't a tribute video. There weren't like, I mean, I guess he's tearing up a little bit at the beginning maybe when he got in the ring, but it felt just more just kind of casual. I'm the guy now, you know, and let's settle in and enjoy this era. Talk about the energy level for Cody coming out, and then just also kind of what you felt about the ebb and flow of his promo as he talked.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like. You know, everything you just described, it's like he's just turning that page into focusing on what's next. Like, it's not a feeling of him being overwhelmed to be in that spot. It's more or less like, okay, I'm here now, and this is what's next for me. And he was beloved. I mean, the crowd ate up everything he did, you know, kids, grown men, from every walk of life. You know, he was universally accepted as being in that top guy, you know, our champion type role. They did play that same video package before the show went on the air that they played on Monday. And, you know, they let everybody know that Cody was going to be opening up the show. So, you know, and then we had like my seats were right by the entrance. So, you know, you can see that they lined up all his pyro and everything, so everybody knew he was coming out, and it was, you know, was incredible for him. And he's over in a way that I haven't really seen. I can't remember the last babyface, maybe like Daniel Bryan, at being this over. And, you know, hopefully fans are fickle, so we'll see how long it lasts. But right now, with where he is and with what the company is doing, I just think that they're just firing on all cylinders.
What'd you think of Bayley's celebration and then the follow-up with Tiffany Stratton and Naomi?
I felt similar, you know, on a lesser scale. I mean, Bayley was definitely well-received, and people were ready to embrace her with the energy of it being a new era, too. So, you know, I thought that it was a good setup. I think that her and Tiffany is the big match down the road. I think Tiffany will eventually be the one to take the title from her, but obviously this wasn't the time for that.
You know, it's time, just like with Cody, it's time to line up the AJ Styles and, you know, the Naomi for them to, you know, strengthen their title, the early stages of their title run, and get to some of the major programs down the road.
How over was LA Knight, and how do you think it compares, as best you can tell, to when he was, you know, red hot middle of last year?
Crazy over. Like, he ain't lost no momentum. Like, everybody went crazy for him. He did the, you know, after they went off the air, he cut a promo, and everybody went crazy for him, you know. Mm-hmm. You know how, like, when you leave the live shows, like, traditionally, everybody used to do the Ric Flair woos. Everybody does the L.A. Knight, yeah, now. So he doesn't seem like he's lost very much momentum at all. Even if he never, like, gets to that top level, I think that he's doing just fine where he's at. I think they did a good job really making – I think they've done a good job with the AJ Styles LA Knight program, making that like a really, really personal feud, and that's allowed him to carry that momentum, and AJ's doing well as a heel with that. You know, LA Knight's the perfect baby face in the playoff of.
Bron Breakker, talk about his presence. How did he feel to you in terms of just filling the ring and commanding the attention of the fans for his squash match over Cameron Grimes?
So when he first came out, I didn't like the music. When the music first hit, I didn't really know who it was, because I was kind of perplexed as to why Cameron Grimes was even out there. So I thought it was like a commercial, like he was going on a commercial or something. So I didn't really understand why he was out there. And then when the Bron Breakker's music hit, I didn't really know who it was. And then when he walked out, you know, through the from behind the curtain or whatever, I'm like, oh, okay, well, yeah, we see where this is about to go now. But I think that he's so freaking explosive. Like his power and speed. I mean, he's really, you know, kind of reminiscent of Goldberg in that sense, just the way he's just, you know, the spear and the strength in which he does. His moveset, I mean, it's really explosive.
Yeah, cool. Javier, anything you want to bring up to Jay in this comment?
In your area, how did the people receive Tamatanga's reveal?
I had a guy who was pretty smart next to me who knew who he was, but I don't feel like a lot of people around us really knew who he was. Like I thought Solo was getting ready to spike him, and then when the guy came out and attacked him, like I said, I didn't really know too much about him, and the people in my area didn't really know too much about him, so I don't think people kind of got the gravity of what was going on, but I don't think a lot of people were really familiar with, you know, Tama Tonga as a performer.
Anything else, Javier?
And when Tiffany came out, it felt like there was a, it could have, it sounded to me like, it, you know, you had like half the crowd cheering, the other half like booing. So how was she reacted? Did it take anything away from Bailey?
Oh, Bailey?
When Tiffany came out, did it take away anything from Bailey based on the reaction that Tiffany got? Because it kind of felt like it was some people cheering, some people booing.
Nah, I feel like Bailey was really over. And, you know, this is her first night as a champion. And, like, she buttered the crowd up really well. And, you know, Bailey's always a favorite amongst the hardcore fans. So I don't think Tiffany took away from what Bailey had already established. Definitely not tonight.
Cool. Jay, anything else you want to share about your experience tonight? Anything off camera, before, after the show, crowd chants, anything that jumped out to you?
I mean, I think I caught the last bit of the caller before, but, like, man, the merch line was crazy all night. Even after the show, people were lined up, you know, just the overall vibe,
You know, it was two dark matches. I don't know, did he talk about the dark matches?
Yeah, but jump in with your take on them.
Yeah, so, like, nobody left at all. And I haven't really been in many shows where the dark matches hit and, like, some people don't leave. So, you know, nobody left. Jay came out, and it was just a party when Jay came out, and Cody came out full pyro run and everything for his dark match against Dom, and you know, just the atmosphere was crazy, man.
Nice. Yeah, Jay, any closing words?
Me?
Yeah, Jay, any closing words?
Yeah, just. We had a hell of a time, man. You know, it was the atmosphere. I really can't get past like where this thing is right now, man. It's truly in a period of I haven't seen since the Attitude Era, and just the energy in the building. Like it was really packed out, like no seats at all. So. You know, just the whole overall energy, man. I went with a couple of my buddies. One of my guys, he got chauffeured around all night. He was suffering from what was the injury? Torn quad. So he was chauffeured around, and like they had to literally bring out extra seats because he couldn't get into the to the section we were in, so they had to bring out extra seats because there was no more room to put anything anywhere else.
Wow. Cool. Jake, glad you got to experience that.
Glad I got to share it, man. Y'all have a good night.
Yeah. Yeah. Look forward to talking to you next time. All right. We're going to go to Chris in Oklahoma next, and then Jason in Australia after that. Chris, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
It's been a long time.
Yes.
Yes. Wow. I have been catching up on audio for the past 2 days. So I was pleasantly shocked at how it went, and the Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa was like, it was almost like art. It looked amazing, even though they're heels. I mean, even the whole story, you know, it's going full circle. And I think that's going to be interesting to see. I was curious what you thought about Cody Rhodes being defending the championship so soon. And do you think, I know they said he's going to be a fighting champion. That's something that, you know, Seth Rollins had put on the bill for his reign on Raw. Whenever he was champion, that he was a fighting champion. And everyone says they're a fighting champion, but Roman isn't. Do you think they should kind of, I don't want to say slow it down, but the more defenses he has, do you think it will kind of, make people get tired of Cody being, you know, wear people down of Cody? I mean, I'm not
good,
saying
good,
it will.
Yeah,
but
good. So, really good question. And it's my answer is I think the more Cody defends the title, the better. I think what people get tired of is a babyface champion who wants to be on the road full time, spends a lot of time with fans, but the perception could be he enjoys carrying the belt around and being cheered and taking photos with fans, but mm-hmm. he's not a fighting champion. That's something Seth Rollins was championing about his heavyweight title. And you want Cody to do that. And I really like the idea of Cody starting off defending against AJ Styles. And I mean, maybe it's LA Knight. Maybe they do face-face, and that, I mean, that'd be daring and novel and different. but if it's no, seriously, like, I mean, go ahead, have two. Just it's a new era. Don't be predictable. But AJ is a guy who, if it's his last PLE main event, and it's against Cody, and they just go out there and have a really good match, and the build is good. I mean, I'm for that too. I really like the fast turnaround for Cody defending. You want to set the pace early that he is going to be basically on every show, and you know, four out of five times defending its title, and the other times it's going to be some sort of, you know, tag match or something maybe. Javier, how do you feel about this? Because to me, I think you get tired of Cody if he's not a defending champion, but he's on TV every week because he's a babyface. He's in his prime. He wanted this moment. Go have a title reign to be proud of. Javier.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And the he should be on every PLE defending the title, unless you have a damn good reason, you know, story wise, where where he's teaming up with like Jay for some reason, you know, against the new bloodline, something like that. But yeah, and I don't want to see extended feuds until and just, you know, knock one out a month. You know, worthy challengers, maybe even one, I wouldn't do too many like on TV, but like, you know, for a big TV show, like in a big, big location, maybe like a Shinsuke or something like that. But yeah, I would definitely, like you said, strike a, you know, have him defend that title because it just, you know, we just came off of a long champion. And that way and that's just to create more equity now that the title has shifted and he's gotten some, like, you know, he beat this dominant champion. Now it's time to, I think it's time to build up the title a bit, in, you know, with worthy, challengers.
Go ahead, Chris. Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was waiting to see if you want to say anything, but, I was really surprised with the pace of SmackDown because it seemed like it went at a faster pace. And I'm actually, when I have a weird eye because I'm always looking, I'm like, okay, on WrestleMania, I was looking at who would win the U.S. Championship. And I was like, okay, if they win the U.S. Championship, you know, it's either heel, face, heel, you know. And I was looking at it from that standpoint, do you think that Damian Priest will be moved to SmackDown, or do you think he'll stay on Raw?
Yeah, it's amazing how little talk there was of the draft tonight, Javier, when I thought that would be one of the major talking points. A little bit of comment from Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, I think. By the way, so it doesn't go unnoticed. I loved Piper Niven saying to Chelsea as they walked off camera, he's not insufferable. What are you talking about in regards to Nick Aldis? Oh, that was so great. Just a fun little thing. So, yeah, we didn't get much draft talk, which again, surprised me. They had so much else going on. And, you know, it's a pretty big conversation piece coming out on Monday. Do you think Cody stays on SmackDown or goes to Raw? You know, I think Raw's going to – they're going to want to make a big splash on Netflix, but they also don't want to make it seem like SmackDown Go to USA makes it a B show again, which it was for years, when, you know, especially when it wasn't live. And then, you know, Damian Priest telling his deal with the title, and if he is the champion as of the draft, which seems, you know, more likely than not, then he's going to end up being the main guy, the main male wrestler, but de facto was the champion on one of those two shows. So, yeah, how does this play out, Javier?
Yeah, I mean, I think the draft is what's going to answer the question.
Sure, of course.
Because for me, the bigger question is which of the two shows, when they move to Netflix, which of the two shows are going to, you know, because they're going to put more shine on one over the other. You know, or even, well, let me rephrase that. Let me take that back. They're even, then, you know, they're like, okay, seeing it evenly. If they put more into the Netflix show and like, you know, pack that full of, you know, full of stars, that sends a signal that, you know, we know that the future is going to be on these streaming services. So we want to make a big impact there. Or they might just, you know, hedge their bets and you know, and in which case, you know, Raw would be their A brand and SmackDown the B brand. Or they might just hedge their bets and, you know, have it on SmackDown. So I think the questions are going to be answered by the draft.
That is begging the question, Javier. What will happen to the draft? That will, when the draft happens, where will Damian Priest end up? Oh, I think we'll know when the draft happens.
The draft happens.
I am aware of that. I'm aware of that, but it's like,
and I'm rubbing it in.
I'm just like, that's the thing. I don't know which of the two brands they're going to favor. By that.
And Chris, I'll throw you a second, but we also don't know if they favor SmackDown until the end of the year, and then they do some sort of trade or something, or shift, or have another draft leading into...
When does the change change?
Early January next year, they move to Netflix. And then
there's a gap that
I still haven't heard if it got filled in. Maybe I missed that. So that they're working on. There's a few weeks where there won't be a Raw, or they'll have to do something different with it.
Okay, new calculation. Cause I was thinking that it was going to be a little bit sooner, and then the whole draft was of the draft was to set that up. So, in that case, I would probably guess that they do end up. I think they end up staying where they are for now.
All right, Chris is exasperated. He wants to jump in here. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I'm just going to say I'm never going to ask Javier a question because he's going to ask a question to answer my question. So I don't think I'm going to ask a question to him no more.
See what happens,
I think the larger audience is still going to be SmackDown. And so I think Cody goes to SmackDown. I think Priest stays on Raw. But I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. You know, generally I'm not. And I mean, I don't want to know ahead of time. I'd be surprised. I mean, not that every question that I have I can get answered, but, you know, there's certain questions I'm going to ask.
Right.
I just want to see what happens. Right.
Like
that, you know?
Yeah. Right. But it was good.
Yeah.
I forgot that Cody is a Raw guy because seeing him today totally messed me up. Yeah. I think he does go to SmackDown.
But he's a Raw guy, but he won the title that's based on SmackDown. So I actually think by WWE rules, he's now a SmackDown wrestler.
Yeah.
And there should be future considerations, some sort of trade, but it doesn't matter because it's, you know, the draft's coming up. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Chris, anything else you want?
No, but it's glad to be back. Javier made me laugh more than I've laughed all day.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Javier,
okay,
thank you.
It was good
talking
to you all.
I'm always going to stay with the team, Wade.
Okay, it was good talking to y'all.
All right. Good, thanks. Don't be a stranger, Chris.
Won't be.
All right, cool. All right, now we'll go to Jason Australia, who's in Australia. Jason, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks, Wade and Javier. I don't want to repeat. I watched the show on a half-hour delay, and I got to your show about a half-hour later, so I don't want to repeat what other people said, but just a couple of things. Number one, when Naomi came out to confront Tiffany, the first thing she said, look, of all nights, this is not the night for you to sort of piss me off. And I got to believe that's got to be in reference to what happened to Jimmy. So it's going to be interesting if they play into her being married to Jimmy. So I like to see that, add a bit of depth to the character there. I guess, Wade, my real question for you, like, what is WWE doing that is brought about this hot streak? And there's a, because we keep hearing people, every person that comes on talks about the energy in the arena, the momentum they have. Well, the question is, why is this happening? And, you know, you've got to look back at this. I mean, this decision that Triple H made to not have Cody win at WrestleMania 39, I mean, what a decision. I mean, this was such a pivotal decision. A lot of people criticized it, but the way that it has paid off, and that was such a ballsy booking decision to make, and look how it's paid off. And then you look into coming into WrestleMania, all of the champions were heels except for Seth Rollins, right? But what they've done, they've built up all these baby faces that the crowd are into, and they're all baby faces that have their own style of personality, so they're all different in their own way, and you just got to look at it and say to yourself, what has brought about this period? Someone like yourself who's, you know, done this for near on 40 years, is it just is it one major thing? Is it a combination of things? Is it people feeling like Vince isn't there anymore and that's an actual like a subconscious thing that people are picking up on? Like, what has brought about this hot period? To me, it's a very interesting case study. And more importantly, what can Tony Khan learn from this? This is a question that I have.
Well, that last part is maybe a conversation for another day. I mean, obviously, it's built in. I mean, there's a lot that Tony Khan ought to learn from it. It doesn't mean he has to be a copycat. I mean, you can learn from someone while still doing your own thing. And there's a lot to be learned. You know, Tony Khan came in to AEW with ideas of what he wanted to do to counter-program WWE and play to a big hardcore base. I remember talking with Jerry Jarrett about the launch of NWA TNA, and he was thinking the internet crowd was huge, and he did the math, and we're going to get X number of people spending $10 every Wednesday to see basically a NWA TNA pickup where WCW left off, and it was going to be about action, and then we had you know, weird stuff going on pretty early on. I won't talk about what's going on in trash cans, but and the internet audience turned out to be a lot smaller than he thought. And it just, you know, catering to the hardcores just didn't work. And so they had a vision. It was pitched as one thing, kind of turned into another. There's just a lot of parallels with AEW, but on a grander, more successful scale, to be sure, with a significantly better product than TNA in the early years, and really most of the way. But lately, you know, they've fallen out of favor. The reaction to last night's or Wednesday night's show, quite negative. I thought they made some positive moves in March, and then going back to, you know, spoiler alert, what didn't turn out to be a big difference maker, showing the Punk Jack Perry footage. I mean, it, you know, it was the peak of Brody King beating down Adam Copeland did more viewers than CM Punk beating up Jack Perry. And I mean, it was good. I mean, it wasn't a bomb or anything like that, but catering to the hardcores who have the encyclopedic knowledge and a list of the dream matches they want to see of people from Mexico versus Japan versus Europe versus the indie scene versus PWG. There's a limited audience for that, but you can base – if you do everything else really well, if you do a lot of other things really well and present your product and create stars, you can absolutely book with that as your philosophy, but there's all these other things you need to do that WWE has been doing. And, I mean, it's a great big-picture question, Jason, and, you know, it's a good one to, one, answer right away, but also ponder and discuss at length, because I think it was – I think it has been an absence of irritants. I think eliminating things that just turn people off and grated on people under Paul Levesque, even if Vince McMahon did make his return and threw some of that stuff back in there, I think that's part of it. I think Cody getting red hot, having an earnest, sincere, unapologetic babyface who, as ostentatious and I'm trying to think of an apt neutral description that's still accurate. I mean, a suit-wearing guy who comes from a son of a plumber. I mean, it's like there's all these juxtapositions with Cody, but people really like him. And wrestling fans who want to be proud of wrestling, Cody makes them feel proud to be wrestling fans in a way that Roman Reigns didn't. And frankly, the way John Cena didn't, because he was just a goof. Cody is not polarizing at this point, which is kind of amazing given how polarizing he was in AEW. Especially in his latter months. So that's part of it. But the brilliance of the Bloodline storyline, they took, and I mean, they were inspired by Prestige TV and created characters. Paul Heyman, you know, strategically put out there, hey, we should be up for an Emmy with the acting and the story we're telling. And some people, you know, laughed at that or scorned, you know, were scornful of, oh, come on, this, you know, there's pro wrestling acting that's good, but it's not METV good. But just throwing it out there in the conversation was a way to kind of reframe what they were doing. Roman Reigns has been phenomenal. You know, it's the role that for years on this show, we're like, when's Vince going to let him be a heel? He's going to be a much better heel. It's amazing how good of a heel he'll be. The little glimpse in NXT showed it. Well, I mean, we were right. And it's not like we're the only ones. It was obvious he was much more fit to be a heel. He's going to be a great babyface too, by the way. But that's in a completely different context with the whole backstory. So all of that's going on. And I mean, Javier, I'm sure as I'm talking, there's other things you're thinking of too, but they just have a really good crew of good wrestlers. The Sami Zayn story, when you talk about Bloodline, we can't forget about Sami Zayn. He was part of getting, you know, kind of pre-Cody or in between Cody. Like he was a guy people really got behind. In a similar way, but also some distinct differences with his personality and his story. That was so compelling. I don't know. Yeah, Javier, I could go on, but I'll throw it to you. What do you want to add to Jason's question or my answer?
Well, since I try to see, I usually see things through the lens of like storytelling, and also like formula. And I think the big difference is Vince McMahon had a formula, and WWE had been using that formula for such a long time. But you can't just rely on the formula because you kill the artistry of storytelling. I mean, look at the Marvel movies. The more recent Marvel movies, they're all formulaic. You know, they're mostly done by the producers, and the directors are not allowed to explore. The director and the writer are not able to explore characters. They're not able to explore different ways of telling stories. And I think that was under Vince McMahon. You didn't have, you just basically had, we're doing the same thing over and over again, and it just became rote. And with new blood, new ideas, the formula doesn't feel like it's changed all that much, but they're allowed to paint like different colors. I mean, I know it's weird the way I'm putting it, but, and I think that's where you're getting, more of it. The new camera angles, now that Kevin Dunn's gone, new camera angles. There was a moment that I picked up where the camera, like Cody's talking about the audience,
mm-hmm.
and the camera like backs up to show the audience.
Yep.
You know, and that was just like a small little thing. And that stuff that when people break are like told, okay, you know, paint outside the lines, that's the kind of little details and stuff that is where like the real art emerges from. And I think that's one of the big changes is also the change in blood, you know, and the change in ideas in the company. So, and then once you get that change, you also get the actual, you know, employees of the company, the wrestlers and the other people and the writers and stuff like that. And you allow them to explore more there. You also raise the morale, which it feeds in on itself.
Logan Paul tonight took credit, saying every record breaking show and every social media record he's part of. I want to mention him. And I also want to mention Rock. And I know people are sensitive in WWE to Rock coming in and saying, I made wrestling cool again. Because it's like, yeah, you know, Chicken Little showing up and wanting to take credit for something that was happening before he got here. However, he's part of accelerating that. He's part of keeping the momentum going and building on it. There's no question Rock brought some eyeballs and some you know, additional mainstream attention to the product. But so did Logan Paul, by the way. And again, this is where it's a conglomeration of factors that kind of came together in a confluence. I don't know. But Logan Paul helped. I mean, he has crazy social media reach, and he turned out to be really good in the ring. I mean, I don't even think of him as a celebrity anymore. I think of him as a WWE wrestler who was a celebrity. You know, just like it's amazing how good he was and how much better he's gotten, where now his matches aren't even about what crazy spot is he going to do. He's just a really good heel wrestler and a really good heel promo. So, you know, and that's when I said, you know, before I threw to Javier, Jason, I could keep coming up with different things. They just have made like one good decision after another. Some of it's luck. I think, as you said, Jason, delaying Cody's win, some people might argue it came too late. Nobody can say it was a mistake. Because to me, it's not a mistake if you choose pizza, but you might have liked a hamburger better, but you love the pizza. You know, it's like, it's not a mistake if in theory you might have liked a different choice better if the other choice was great. This choice turned out to be great. So whatever decision they made, it's pure speculation if it would have worked out better or not. But what they did wasn't only not a disaster, it's worked out really well. So it's all those things. Jason, what's your response to what Javier and I are saying here?
Well, look, I know it's a big picture question, not really related to SmackDown, but to me it kind of is, because every time you get somebody come on, they're just talking about the atmosphere, and it feels like it's the attitude
there
again.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And for me, the reason I ask this question, I think it's an important one to answer, especially if you're in the company. We're doing so well. What is it that we're doing so we can maintain this momentum? Because at any time, you know, a bad decision can be made, or a perception or something, it can all be taken away. So it's like a sports team, mate. If a sports team is doing really well, I want to know why. Like, I want to know the success behind why. If a business is making profit after profit, revenue, however you want to frame it, I want to know the why. And I want to know, if I have my own business, how can I learn from that, as opposed to just talking about how well they're doing. So that's why I asked the question. And for me, I just think whatever they're doing, everyone on the TV show is coming across like a star. So I don't know if it's how they're framing them, how they're talking about them, the graphics they're using, the way the commentators are. Every single person is coming across like a star. So whatever they're doing, I hope they understand how they're doing it and why they're doing it, and they keep doing it. Because as a fan, all I care about is my entertainment. And I get annoyed with this tribalism between AEW and WWE, because I want them both to do well, and I want AEW maybe to put an ego aside and say, what have WWE done? And to me, Wade, I think to myself, you know, WWE talk about the WWE experience. So what is the AEW experience? And the one thing I look at, like I said, I don't think it has been an accident that for the past couple of years or so, we've had heels as champions and we've built up very popular baby faces. So the crowd are into everyone and they're all different, unique type of baby faces, especially on the men's side. Knight is different to Cody Rhodes, different to CM Punk, different to Kevin Owens, to Sami Zayn, to Randy Orton. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Seth Rollins, there's like a group of seven top baby faces that everyone can, Jey Uso, everyone can get excited about. So I'm hoping they copy that formula. But just quickly moving back to like the programming as it is, I heard you talking about Gunther. I think Gunther's going to come out on Monday and almost blame himself for the loss to Sami, that it almost took himself to defeat himself. He's the only person that can defeat himself because he had Sami, you know, he had Sami there, but, you know, he got a bit of ahead of himself. And I also like the fact that, on another note, with these international shows that they're doing, they can afford, it's more than likely it's going to be AJ Styles, right? There's got to be a reason why Cody mentioned the NWA thing. They can get away with putting relatively predictable cards on for these international shows and have predictable outcomes. But because of the unique atmosphere of the international show, that's more than going to make up for it. Because you saw what happened in Australia, right? I was at the show. It was a pretty predictable card. I mean, everyone that won, we knew was going to win. But the atmosphere and the way it across on TV, it more than made up for it. So they're in a very strong position where they can just get where they need to get to with SummerSlam and War Games as Survivor Series, have these international shows in between, give relatively predictable matches, but the atmosphere is going to make up for it. So the way they've planned this out and done it, it's very, very good. And I just like to talk about how it's the nuts and bolts and how they've done it. I just find it very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in a way, if I'm WWE, like, I get what you're saying about they need to figure out what's working and keep doing it. There's part of me that's just like your instincts and your philosophy and the background that leads to the impetus, that leads to the decisions that you're making as a creative team right now. And it's, you know, Paul Levesque at the top, but it's Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns and that group, and it's Cody contributing, and Seth has a voice, and there's veteran writers who have been there for a long time, and on and on. Like, almost don't overthink it. Like, I mean, in a sense, if things are going well, I don't know that you want to sit down and deconstruct it and start, like, micro-strategizing. Just go with the flow. It's, to me, it's when things start going a little downward, that's when you want to pause and go, wait, what are we doing differently? But when things are going well, maybe don't overthink it. Maybe just keep going with your instincts. I don't think they should be in a mode where they're like, we need to figure out what we're doing so we don't screw it up. That's like, they say like race car drivers are told to never think, don't hit the fence. Because that's when they hit the fence. What they should tell themselves is stay on the road. And for WWE, I don't think they should go, what do we want to avoid doing? Or what do we, like, just stay on the road. Just keep doing what your instincts tell you. Plan ahead. I mean, I think long-term planning is part of it. You know, they're doing more of that. Think about what they need to do. Or just don't overthink it and stay in the road they're on. Stay in the lane that they're on.
Well, I get a sense, Wade and Javier, that there is an internal message within their team that is we've got to own our booking. Don't run away from the results that we book and don't run away from our booking. So if they make a decision, a lot of times wrestlers will refer to matches and losses and they'll own it. And I like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm a WWE writer that was in the 2000s and the 2010s era and whatnot, I've got to be frustrated because I clearly believe that Triple H has given a license to these writers that are helping him out to carve out these long-term storylines. And he's not just waking up and changing them. Certainly, he believes that they can pivot, But I just have to believe that they have given so much freedom to carve out long-term storylines and allow them to play out, because he's got more patience to say Vince McMahon, who might wake up. And we've heard the stories. He'll say, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. So these writers clearly are in a better atmosphere. And I feel sorry for the ones back in the day, because they probably have all these great ideas that we never saw. But you've got someone at the top who says, oh, no one's going to remember that. And I believe Triple H believes that, no, we have to think that our audience will remember everything. They're a more intelligent, detailed audience, and we have to own our booking. And that's just the sense I'm getting watching the program.
That's good. You know, I've talked about that a lot, Jason, in recent years. Like, own your finishes. Don't run from them. If somebody loses, embrace it. Talk about it. Don't pretend it didn't happen, and use that as a plot point to advance things. Javier, you want to jump in with any thoughts on this?
Jason just makes me think so much that I've just, like, our 100 different levels. If I think of something, I'll jump in.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You can just stand there and be impressed.
Sorry about that, guys. it's early over here in Perth, right? It's only like it's approaching midday, so like I'm all fresh and everything. You guys, it's late at night, so I don't want to throw out like all these different type of scenarios and everything, mate. I should have just stuck to things basic. I get what you're saying.
But Jason, what do you think of the Bloodline developments tonight?
Oh, I loved it. You know, and I think the question is, who's the tribal chief now? Is the tribal chief The Rock, or is it Solo Sikoa? I don't know much about Tama Tonga. All I know is that he's Haku's son, which makes me think, okay, bang, I've got to pay attention to him. I thought it was interesting that Paul Heyman mentioned Haku in his Hall of Fame speech, because he said, look, if his sons were to get in any trouble, Haku's there, so he's already laying the groundwork down. And also like the fact from a babyface point of view, he's talking about Roman Reigns owning accountability. So surely they are pointing towards a Roman Reigns babyface turn coming back to sort of go against Solo. And that's just the way I look at it. But the other thing is, like, we have to be patient with this. People were complaining that Solo wasn't being featured or he wasn't getting victories. Simple fact of the matter is they always had this as the plan. The Rock sort of came in, took the attention away from Solo. It was about Rock and Roman and Cody and Seth. Solo was there in the background doing his thing. As Triple H said, we can't put the spotlight on everyone, but when the time is right, we're going to put the spotlight on him, and it's going to mean something. So I think it's played out nicely, and now they're just, hey, when Paul Heyman said that we were only like in the third inning or the fourth inning, he wasn't lying. We thought that they'd hit the ninth inning, it was all over for the Bloodline. Now they've just sewn another wrinkle in that can last the year. So, you know, good on them for doing that.
Intriguing. If Haku shows up saying I'm the tribal chief, all kinds of fun pieces, chess pieces that could be put on
well,
the board.
Well, you know, wait,
that we're not expecting.
Wait. If that happens, if that happens, no one's going to go against him. So that's the end, right? He's the tribal chief. Like, he's going to go against Haku. That's the end, right there.
Well, there's that. Yeah. Cool. Jason, anything else?
No, I'll leave it at that. Thanks, guys.
Oh, thanks. Oh, it's great talking to you. Javier, anything else from SmackDown you want to bring up?
I'm still pondering the question of what they still running that through my head. One thing I want to bring up that we didn't bring up was organization also. I think that also matters a lot. Jason touched upon it, is following through with the actual storylines. Example being the Bobby Lashley cross thing really wasn't really going anywhere, but we did get to the end. I mean, you know, you got to the end. So the people who are, it's not even less of the people who might be, you know, cause like less than nobody was interested in, at least it's a promise to the audience that we're not just going to like disappear and just, you know, we're going to give you at least, you know, even if we cut it short, even if we were, you know, outside of injury, you know, cause that's something that's out of your control. At least your story is going to get an ending, even if it's truncated because no one's really watching it. You know, it's when you leave it open ending. It's similar to comic books. You want to, even if a comic book run gets cut short, you don't want to leave. You want to write that one last issue to give an ending to that storyline, because if you just leave it open ended, you know people who spent their money, spent their time, even if there's not that many, because you know obviously that's why you're cutting it off. You know, you're basically saying that, okay, your money didn't matter because not enough of you bought it. Mm-hmm. You know, your time invested in it isn't worth it because, you know, so I think that's another very important thing. you by doing that, you're giving audiences more. They're going to be able to buy in more into storylines because they know it's not going to eventually get snatched out from under you. And that's one of the things that JR says a lot is that, you know, because some wrestlers, were not reliable. A perfect example, Ultimate Warrior was someone I always wanted to get behind, but because of all the problems he caused, whenever he felt like he was he was getting any momentum, he would do something, he would do something and then he would disappear from TV for a while. I couldn't really get behind him, even though I loved the character, obviously not the person, but, I loved the character, but it just, there was nothing, there wasn't enough to keep momentum and I couldn't trust him anymore. And I think that's another important thing that, which is a big difference between then and now, is that now we can actually trust that we can invest into a storyline because we're going to see it through.
I think WWE's given the impression that, and again, this is so weird to say with all the Vince McMahon scandal, but that they have that the people, there's a sense from the fan base that the wrestlers who are on the roster and being featured, men and women, are largely, mostly to a higher level than in the past, passionate about their jobs, you rooting for them to succeed, they work hard for you, and you're going to be rewarded for your fandom with a sincere effort. And part of that is marketing, WWE making the fans feel important. But it is. The wrestlers really feel that way in so many cases. The WWE built up, sort of this propaganda thing, of WWE being, it's such an honor to work for the company and all that. But there's truth to it. This is a continuum of an entertainment form that people get invested in. And WWE has done a good job, and not just through fraudulent fake marketing, because there's just genuinely good people on the roster working hard together to put on a good product. And I think they've sold the fan base on that. And like you say, there aren't enough Ultimate Warrior situations to offset that. There's this Vince McMahon thing that they needed to exterminate from the company, and they did a sloppy job with it, but Vince had leverage and it was complicated when his successor was his daughter and his son-in-law, and people thought WWE couldn't survive without Vince McMahon, or maybe even more so, people who knew it could survive without him feared that sponsors and network executives and TV partners would think it couldn't survive without him. And so they had to battle that. And now I just think there's sort of a kind of a group celebration of, we're past that and things are going great. And that's where the emphasis was over the weekend, and with Paul Levesque and Stephanie McMahon talking about a new era, and then coming out on Raw and talking about it. I think they really wanted to send that signal to the fan base. Todd Martin talked about it on The Fix yesterday, that he thinks it also was sending a message to top executives going, don't you dare think about Rock and Brian Gewirtz taking over for Levesque. And Stephanie is welcome back here, and she got a good reception. There's no stink on her because of Vince. So his theory, his idea is, yeah, part of this is, sending a message to management and the networks and advertisers, everybody that they were worried that thought it couldn't survive without Vince. And so it's a little PR there too, but it's all those things and more. Yeah, it really is. Anyway, Javier, anything else you want to add?
For that, no.
Okay. Anything else otherwise?
Well, I mean, we haven't talked about my favorite segment of the show.
What is it? That's what I'm throwing to you.
And I'm only half kidding. that promo package for Austin Theory and Grayson Waller.
That's great. Dude, going out of the town, bringing the belts with him everywhere. What talk about it? What'd you like?
Oh, man, it's really hard. I really want to go back and watch it again so I could actually really break it down. But I was all in on it. Yeah. Maybe it's just it had this. Like it felt like they were just coming off the set of a new version of Miami Vice or something, they didn't feel like jokes. They felt like, we're cocky heels and stuff. Yep. And we're
it predates you, Javier, but it reminded me of Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez as the dynamic duo in World Class Championship Wrestling. Chris Adams had turned heel, too cocky, top tier personalities. Adam's a better worker than, neither of them were like super, super great workers, but they were big personalities. And it's the type of video I would have imagined them doing when they were just out drinking and gloating and womanizing after winning tag titles. And, But Chris and Gino weren't treated like jokes and sort of jobbed out and stuff like that, like to a degree Waller and Theory have been. So when you say they didn't feel like a joke anymore, they still got some work to do. Now I'll throw back to you. I just want to sneak in that mid-'80s world-class reference.
But in the way that they were portrayed in that video was like they felt more like real people, because I think that's been the problem from both of them, where, you know, Theory felt like he's putting on the heel act. You know, which I mean, and it's weird because it's different from when I watched him in Evolve. When he was Evolve, he seemed like a real person. He in WWE, he's never felt like a real person.
Interesting.
Specifically, since like the NXT run when he was doing the stuff with the Gargano Way, and it feels like that character. He's still basically based on that character, as opposed to just being, you know, because in Evolve he was just a cocky young guy who says, I'm going to be the youngest world champion, and that's what I'm going to do. And he was just serious about it, and he was like a real, you know, piece of work. And, you know, and this is the Austin Theory that when, like, when I say, you know, this guy could be a champion, you know, that was the Austin Theory I was seeing, and this was, like, felt like it. If they could bottle whatever the hell they did, and then, you know, you're going to be able to tell Todd, I told you so.
Yeah, I mean, you watch this and you're like, Theory, it's a long ball with him, and there's so much talent right now in WWE. It's silly to think that, you know, well, I shouldn't say it's silly. Theory might have been a phenomenon that just rose to the top, and, you know, who had youth and no baggage and more athleticism than LA Knight, but got just as popular. And I mean, then they would be thinking about pushing him at the top, but it's a crowded field, but there's still something there. And that video showing him a year ago and then the celebration and a different dimension than, like you say, we've seen lately from him or seen for a while from him. You got a glimpse into why, you know, I've heard from people in WWE, he's a big part of our main event future.
And that's the thing. I think this is an opportunity now to actually, similar to what I said, give Jade and Bianca a run and make those titles mean something. You know, if you already have them, the comedy stuff on Raw, and I think you had mentioned that. I think you had mentioned on the your Raw report that the titles went to basically two comedy groups.
Yep.
You know, but if you could actually make them serious, you know, make them serious. I mean, and I don't mean serious in terms of like, you know, or serious, but like, you know, that what we saw, the cocky heels,
incredible.
The two, yeah, the bros, you know, that kind of serious, and like, you know, fight teams, win, dick cheat, just not over the top. You know, and then like say, hey, yeah, we got your number, that kind of thing. Just make them like, you know, make them what everyone sees Logan Paul as. You know, so yeah, I mean, they're in a good trajectory just based on this. So, which is why I liked it so much. It's like, you know, there's potential. If you're if you follow this, you might have something. You know, you might be able to build something greater on here. And that's the thing. That's what I've been enjoying. Is that it feels like a lot of the stuff is like, you know, what's Gunther going to do next? What's, you know, McIntyre? You know, now you got the McIntyre thing. I mean, as much as I don't like Punk, I'm like, I want to see Drew McIntyre get his hands around Punk's neck for what he did. You know, I'm excited for that. You know, I'm excited for just, you know, what Priest is going to do, because, you know, now that he's champ, is he going to be, you know, interim, you know, or what's the word? McIntyre used it.
Who used it?
McIntyre used it. Transitional.
Oh,
champion.
Right.
Is he going to be a transitional champion, and we're going to move on to somebody else? And think about today, we did not see. Because think about the people we didn't see today. We didn't see Randy Orton, who's a really, really over guy, and we didn't see Damage Control, which, you know, so, like, you know, it's a lot of, you know, that's two big acts that have been doing a lot in the last couple of weeks, and now we have Bron Breakker coming up. I know that there's a lot of the call-ups coming up. The only disappointing thing today, we didn't see Ava. I was really disappointed we didn't get to see her magnificence. I got her name right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's too much out there, but It's going to be interesting with the people coming up too. So, it's a good problem to have when you have that much talent.
It is, yeah. No, I'm glad you brought that up because that could have been something we didn't bring up, and it's one of the production touches that I like tonight. The WrestleMania videos, well, even just having Logan Paul, you know, got a little promo was good. You know, it didn't take up a lot of time, but it was a way to get him on the show and follow up on WrestleMania.
Yeah, and the promos to set up the stuff that was going on. Kevin Owens coming out, that was another thing that I really enjoyed. You know, because Kevin Owens is just like, you know, a national treasure. Just
yes.
You know, the little touches that he does, like just like being a dick and knocking over the shirts at there was no reason for that. Just, you know.
But he was also nice to Byron Saxton, which I like, because that's so a juxtaposition from how everybody treats interviewers.
And also the whole now there's the not surprise who took out Dragon Lee with obviously Carlito.
Well, I actually, you know what? I liked Ray's interview because he wasn't being cryptic. He wasn't like his character wasn't saying, "I know it's you, but I'm not saying it yet." He was just saying his philosophy. The truth will surface. Karma. There will be karma. But he wasn't aiming it at Carlito because his character is oblivious to it right now. But we're onto it, and we're going, Ray, you're right, but for reasons you don't realize. It's not Escobar who's got karma coming. It's not the truth, you know, because they did it right after Escobar denied it. So everything Ray said made sense. But it will totally make sense with Carlito. And, you know, Carlito was like quick to jump in when everyone's laughing. Oh yeah. You can just like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, and so when Jason says, what is it about WWE that's helped? When I say it's a lot of things that have led to WWE success. Part of it is higher IQ execution of things. They're not perfect, but I mean, so, you know, people are like, oh, what about this? What about that? But like that interview, we can sit here and talk about it and be like, thought was put into it. There's the character's intent. There's this other meaning that we are excited for that character to find out about. It's understandable that he wouldn't be thinking that, but we are thinking it. And there's a clue we've noticed, but he hasn't because Ray's a good guy and thinks the best about people who haven't turned on him yet. So, including Dominic.
Well,
yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing. Maybe he does know that it was Carlito and that was aimed at Carlito.
And I think that it's fair to consider, and you might be right, that might be, and it's that I am choosing, I shouldn't say I'm choosing, my inclination is we're supposed to believe, or at least his character believes, he's talking about Santos Escobar. But it could be exactly what I said it wasn't, which is it's a cryptic message. I don't know if cryptic's the right word. A passive-aggressive message to Carlito, and he's just waiting for his moment.
Yeah, because it depends on which direction you want to do, you want to go. It's like, you know, is Ray really, you know, is Ray Sting or not?
Well, you know what? Well, I would say that Ray doesn't have to be naive to not realize Carlito did it, even if we're onto it. I don't think that's true in this situation.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, I'm just saying that you could do either way. So
yeah, for sure. But I don't think people are going, oh, Ray's a sucker for believing and not having it cross his mind that it's Carlito when we're all seeing it. I think they've played this in a sophisticated way where they're not putting Ray in a bad position. They're very close to it, but they just haven't done it. I mean, there's
Carlito hasn't
given anything away yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he isn't that in that he's going to look like the dumb baby face who should have seen it coming.
Yeah.
It's just that, like, I'm just saying that at some point you got to ask, is it me?
right. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. About all I got. Let me see. I think that's about it.
Excellent. I'm good.
Yeah, I probably going to remember something on the one thing about Bailey. I don't know. She keeps calling. She's currently calling herself the role model again. I'm concerned that she might end up kind of in the Seth situation where, because she never really turned
Right.
And she's never really apologized for what she's done or explained it. And she's calling herself the role model. I'm like, I don't want my kids to have her as a role model.
When she gave her background, like, you guys have stuck with me through ups and downs.
Yeah.
And she didn't say, and it would have, you're right. I would have, if I were her, my preference would have been for her to say, and you've forgiven me when I got off track of who I really am and what I stand for. Just something like that.
Yeah. And there was also Corey. I, by the way, I liked Corey today. I think the best he's been since he's taken over the play-by-play. But he did have one line that was like her, where he says that Bailey's she defeated her longtime rival Io Sky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Corey, I mean, they didn't break up until like right after Rumble. I mean, she's been feuding with other people for longer periods of time. how do you define long term?
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, the idea of being Io Sky is the one who came in and was an agitator who turned everybody else against her. But it's long time is a stretch. Long time rival. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so that was the only thing that, and I'm not saying it was horrible.
Right, right.
By any stretch of the imagination, that to me was about the weakest thing.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I thought that as I was watching it too. Cool. All right, Javier, great having you on. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good night, Whit.
Yes, I'm looking forward to a weekend without as much wrestling as last weekend, as fun as last weekend was. Just, you know, and this was a good, I'm glad SmackDown was fun. It was a really good way to go into the weekend. And you know, next week's going to be a blast. There's a lot going on next week too. So thank you everybody for listening. Thanks to our on-site correspondents, our callers, everybody. And we will talk to you all next time.